WTMK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. Kevin McCarthy is ousted as House Speaker and says he won't run for the position again.
I leave the speakership with a sense of pride, accomplishment, and yes, optimism. From the day I entered politics, my mission has always been to make tomorrow better than today. I fought for what I believe in, and I believe in this country of America.
CBS's Scott McFarlane.
For the first time in its history, the U.S. House stripped its Speaker of his job.
The office of Speaker of the House of the United States House of Representatives is hereby declared vacant.
Kevin McCarthy's rocky leadership of one of the most narrow majorities ever in the House of Representatives, which he earned only after a marathon 15-round drama in January, ended with a dramatic flourish as 8 Republicans joined all House Democrats to remove him.
CBS's Nancy Cordes with White House reaction.
There's no gloating on this end of Pennsylvania Avenue. We just got a short statement saying that the president hopes that the House elects a new speaker quickly because this vacancy creates major uncertainty for the White House on several fronts.
GOP Congressman Jim Jordan says Republicans will meet next Wednesday to vote on a new speaker. CBS's Matt Piper has the latest on a huge crash in Arkansas.
Officials in Arkansas say at least 2 people have been killed following a pileup on Interstate 67 in Jackson County. Police say 11 passenger vehicles and 4 commercial vehicles were involved. Smoke from a nearby field fire affected drivers' visibility, and police say that contributed to the wreck. Parts of the interstate were closed for hours.
Hunter Biden pleads not guilty to federal charges stemming from his purchase of a gun in 2018. He appeared in a federal court in Delaware after the tentative plea deal he reached with feds fell apart over the summer. White House press secretary said Karine Jean-Pierre says the president is standing with Hunter.
The president loves his son. He's going to continue to support him as he rebuilds his life. I'm not going to speak to any private conversations that this president has with any member of his family.
At former President Trump's New York civil fraud trial to determine damages, the judge issues a limited gag order on Trump and his legal team after an online post about one of the judge's staffers. CBS's Robert Costa.
I sat just steps behind the former president. He was whispering to his attorneys, reviewing papers, fully engaged in all of this, but didn't say much inside the courtroom. Outside, he went out and told reporters he is willing to testify at some point in the coming months, but soon will be on the campaign trail.
LaFonza Butler is the newest member of the U.S. Senate. The Democrat will serve the rest of late Senator Dianne Feinstein's term, which expires in 2024. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer says of Butler,
she is going to be a great, great senator. I'm excited, happy, thrilled that she is here.
This is CBS News.
If you need to hire, you need Indeed, because Indeed's all-in-one hiring solution helps you attract, interview, and hire candidates all from one place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
With news on WAUK The Shaw, I'm Stuart J. Waddles. With demo plans released, there's still an ongoing dispute about who's paying for the teardown of the Horizons West condo building. The city of Waukesha had taken legal action against condo owners to make them pay the $1 million bill, leading to a settlement. A resolution states that if the condo owners get payment from the insurance company, they must direct the insurer to pay the city to cover the demo costs. However, the source of the funds hinges on the outcome of the condo's owner's appeal against their insurance company. There's a hearing happening today in federal court. Bob Uecker is on first pitch duties tonight. Traffic around the ballpark will be impacted due to playoff baseball in Milwaukee, with the team for sure playing again tomorrow, regardless of today's outcome. With news on WAUK The Shaw, I'm Stuart J. Waddles.
Don't let biased algorithms or degree screens or exclusive professional networks or stereotypes. Don't let anything keep you from discovering the half of the workforce who are stars. Workers skilled through alternative routes rather than a bachelor's degree. It's time to tear the paper ceiling and see the stars beyond it. Find out how you can make stars part of your talent strategy at tearthepaperceiling.org. Brought to you by Opportunity at Work and the Ad Council.
RPG came through the belly of the aircraft. We don't talk about the female combat wounded. These are our daughters and our sisters and our mothers. Wounded Warrior Project came into my life and taught me how to stand back up and get back in the fight. The truth is, I think we all have this strength inside of us, but until you're tested, you just don't know it's there.
See how Wounded Warrior Project empowers women veterans like Beth by visiting woundedwarriorproject.org/empowerwomenvets.
Earl Ingram.
It's Wednesdays, that means Dr. Craig, Executive Director of Citizen Action, is on the line and in full effect.
I think that the caller is right to be very suspicious. So we need to kind of hold both thoughts at once. Let's see if there's something there about Robin Voss being afraid and backing down, but let's be prepared for the idea this is all a ruse.
The Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings 8 to 10 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Civic Media radio stations, providing your news, conversations, and fun you won't find anywhere else.
Think Tank approved corporate news and commentary? Are you tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. Quote of the day comes from Representative Eric Swalwell. When asked whether he would vote to save Speaker Kevin McCarthy, he said, "Not my monkey, not my circus. I'm a hard no." And that is the right response from Democrats, right there. Very simple. You know, not our deal. We've got no fight in this. This is the Republicans' problem. Democrats not coming to their savior. Good on Swalwell and the Democrats, because maybe you heard Kevin McCarthy is out, and I'll be honest, I couldn't help but think of John Boehner today. John Boehner was stuck in my head all day, and look, he's probably drunk and stoned somewhere, laughing his behind off, because you don't have John Boehner to kick around and make cry anymore. And this is what Kevin McCarthy says: not going to have Kevin McCarthy to kick around anymore, because he has announced he's not going to run for reinstatement, re-implementation, re-election, whatever. He's not going to do it. We'll see. But again, my mind went back to karma. There's that little thing called karma. And, you know, Kevin McCarthy, you may remember when he was going to be speaker, he was going through the whole 15 times of being the guy. He said, "I want you to watch Nancy Pelosi hand me the gavel." And then the kicker was, "It will be hard not to hit her with it." Now, interesting statement. You've got a guy, you know, wanting to beat up a woman with a hammer. Not a good look for a conservative. But, you know, what else is new? I'm kind of curious what Nancy Pelosi was thinking today of where she'd like to stick that gavel. Just kind of a thought. Now, there is an acting speaker for the moment. As I understand, he was chosen from a super secret list that McCarthy put into place, you know, a while, because this was predictable. Understand, his being ousted, very predictable. We talked about it, you know, back in January when this whole thing was going down. But Patrick McHenry, the bow tie wearing Wall Street puppet from North Carolina, he will be the acting secretary. That could be a day, could be a week, could be a month. Who knows? Because, well, the Republican Party's in chaos. And the vote to remove Kevin McCarthy was 216 to 210. 19 people, I guess, didn't vote. All the Democrats and 8 Republicans voted to oust him. Now, understand, the Democrats Their speaker is Hakeem Jeffries. That's who they're voting for. That's who they want. They do not want Kevin McCarthy. They are not in the business of saving the Republicans. But you're going to hear this. You're going to hear this for the next several days. That, you know, the Democrats caused this. This is the Democrats doing. No, no. This is eight Republicans. Andy Biggs from Arizona, Ken Buck from Colorado, Tim Burchett from Tennessee, Eli Crane from Arizona, Matt Gaetz, who, well, caused all of this, from Florida, Bob Good from Virginia, Nancy Mace from South Carolina, who herself I can see throwing her name into the ring to be speaker, and Matt Rosendale from Montana. Those are the eight that ousted McCarthy. Now, again, this is McCarthy's fault from the beginning for allowing one person to move on vacating the chair, which is what they did. Again, Dems, they were their guys, Hakeem Jeffries. If you had put Hakeem Jeffries up, all the Democrats would have voted for him. That's how this works. Now, understand, our government is now paralyzed. Well, without a speaker, the House isn't going to be able to move any legislation. There's no agenda, no legislative agenda. And I'll be quite frank, the Republican agenda is bad. It's terrible. And maybe shouldn't be moving because it's not going to go anywhere in the Senate. But this is the first time in the history of our country. Think about this for a second. First time in the history of the country that a speaker has been shown the door midterm. That, again, uncharted territory thanks to the MAGA Republicans. And we have no idea when they're going to, if they're going to be able to elect someone speaker. Who would want it? I've heard a lot of names thrown out. You know, Brian Fitzpatrick from Pennsylvania's name keeps being thrown out as kind of a centrist candidate that might get Democrats to vote for him. And I'm telling Democrats, don't. Your guy is Hakeem Jeffries. This is a Republican problem. Don't solve this for them. Because they're in disarray. And, you know, I was kicking around ideas of fun ideas to go, you know, look, I mean, we're already falling into the rabbit hole. We're already in, you know, kind of a free fall into chaos. Could it get worse? And my mind went to Trump for speaker. Because you remember, Marjorie Three Names threw that out a while ago. Could Donald Trump be speaker? Because you don't need to be a member of Congress to be Speaker of the House. Could he be? Nah, he's got a lot on his plate, a lot of trials, a lot of, you know, 91 felonies he's fighting over, you know, the potential loss of his business in New York, you know, $250 million in fines. Got a lot on his plate. But it would be, I guess, you know, entertaining to see them try and move this. And, you know, and speaking of Trump, Trump could have saved McCarthy. All he had to do was put out one truth and say, you know, hey, knock it off. Act like a functional party. Act like you know what you're doing. Act like you've been somewhere. See, this is the weird thing. You got these eight Republicans who, well, they're the Chaos Caucus. They're the Kook Caucus. They're the ones who want broken government. Now, here's the thing. We're going to keep hearing this. That government is broken and we need to fix government by tearing it down. This is going to be the Republican mantra because it's been their mantra for years. Only now it's going to accelerate because now they've completely broken it and they don't know how to fix it. So now it's finish it off, burn it to the ground, and let's start over with no ideas. Now understand, government is not broken. When you have people who understand why they're in office, when you have people who understand that they're there to serve we the people, when you have functional leadership who don't agree to stupid things, you have government that works. When the Democrats were in charge of the House, you didn't see this kind of chaos. When Nancy Pelosi held the gavel that McCarthy wanted to hit her with, you didn't see this kind of chaos. You didn't see we're going to shut the government down and destroy the economy and send us into recession every couple of months. You didn't see that. Didn't happen. But Republicans are going to tell you, well, it's because government's broken. No, you're broken. The Republican Party is broken. And they're on display for all of us to see right now. I had a little hope yesterday. I had about that much hope yesterday that Kevin McCarthy was going to go, hey, you know, we averted a shutdown. We need to do some functional leadership. Let's make some deals and let's get some consensus. Let's move off of the crazy stuff and find common ground and move forward so that we have a functional government, so that we don't have to shut down over Thanksgiving, which I guess now, you know, might be in peril. But hooray, this is what Republican government gets us. This is what happens when you put people who don't believe in government in charge. And then they push policies that are destructive. Understand, red state policies are literally killing people. Conservative ideology is killing people. And I find it interesting, the Washington Post had a story today that pointed out just that. And when they looked at three different areas, Erie, Ashtabula, and Chautauqua, I think, in New York. And they said, look, you know, you look at the policies that they move on, implementation of a cigarette tax, you know, public investment in health, tightening seatbelt laws, and these different areas where local policies pushed by, you know, either, you know, conservatives or liberals, what happens? And what they found is Americans are more likely to die before age 65 than residents of similar nations, despite living in a country that spends substantially more per person on healthcare than its peers. They write that many of these early deaths can be traced to decisions made years ago by local and state lawmakers over whether to implement a cigarette tax, invest in public health, tighten seatbelt regulations. Because they went back and they found, you know what? The cigarette tax. New York has a very high cigarette tax, something like $5.35 a pack. Ohio has like $1.60, I think it is. Guess which area has people who are dying at a higher rate from lung cancer? Yeah, the place that cigarettes are cheaper because more people are using them. Makes sense. It's what they're doing. And it's your freedom. It is your freedom to smoke until your lungs fall out and you can't breathe anymore. But here's the thing. The rest of us pick up the tab for that. And again, it's these conservative ideologies that continue to harm people. Same thing with COVID. We know in the places that were the most ardent supporters of the anti-vax movement, higher death rates. That's the reality. And I'm okay with that. I'm okay with people going, hey, you know, it's my freedom to smoke and to do whatever, and I'm willing to die a decade or two earlier. Good. Bye. And I know that sounds cold and callous, but these are the choices these areas sadly make. And I know I'm going to get angry emails. You know, there are Democrats in those areas too. Yeah, I know. I know. But here's the thing. This is where politics plays in all of this. You look at a state like Florida. Florida right now is moving to roll back child labor protections. There are already, and this there are already 15 states that have done this. And Florida would be the 16th. And basically just gutting hours and letting kids work overnights before they go to school, you know, all kinds of stuff. And I started thinking about, you know, where we are in this world, because Florida has a real serious immigration problem. No immigrants are going there, so their crops are basically rotting and nobody will come and do work there cheap. They got a real cheap labor problem, because that's what, you know, a wave of immigration brings you. You bring people in and they do the work that, you know, Americans don't really want to do for poverty wages. So Florida's struggling. So what's their answer? What's their answer to getting people employed in agriculture or in, you know, seafood processing or, you know, or any of those, the meat packing industry? You know, what's the answer? Well, the answer is children. The answer is gutting child labor laws to get those kids into those jobs. Now, understand, they're not kids that look like yours or mine. They're not going to be middle class suburban kids. These are going to be minority kids. These are going to be brown kids who come from other countries. These are going to be those children first. But eventually, they're going to run out of those children because, well, they're going to slam the door and they're coming for your kids. And they're going to do it in a way that also takes out public education, because that's their other wet dream. If they could just get rid of public education, voucherize it. And as I was explaining to someone today, the dream for the Christian right has always been get those voucher, get that voucher money, get a backpack full of cash. That's your child's education. And you can take it anywhere you want, even homeschooling. And, you know, 15 years ago, someone told me that that was the goal, to get homeschool parents to get paid by the government to educate their children so they could indoctrinate them how they wanted to. And look, they're doing a pretty good job of convincing people that no, vouchers are good. Now, here's the kicker for me. And you're going to want to write this down because this is important. I view very soon this movement to say, no, you know, work is education. That backpack full of voucher money that we're using to gut public education with, we're no longer going to give that to homeschool parents or to charter schools. No, we're going to give that to employers. So that, because now work is education. So we're going to pay employers to exploit cheap labor children, and that's going to be that's the future. Now again, it's going to start with those poor and those minority communities. It's going to start with them first, but eventually, when they destroy the economy for the rest of us, and AI and robotics, you know, destroy work in America, it's the children who will get most exploited because they'll be cheapest because they're going to come with their own money, their own funding. That is conservative world on steroids. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Does that sound crazy? Does it sound outlandish? Yeah, it sounded almost as outlandish to me 15 years ago when someone said, no, we're going to take tax dollars and give it to parents to indoctrinate their children with religious education at home. Yeah, it was crazy back then too. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425. Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Well, you know, I'm reading the Washington Post, and there's an article in there about Trump and the fraud trial. And this is one of those things where I'm so tired of the both sides-ism. I'm so tired of Trump getting always the benefit of the doubt. That I was reading this article, and it said a civil trial over alleged business fraud by former President Donald Trump and his company began Monday. No. It's not alleged. He's guilty. He was found guilty. It was a summary judgment, the bench trial. Now, you know, Trump's losing his mind. Evidently spent the day whining about not having a jury trial. But hey, that's on you, buddy. All on you. But this stuff drives me crazy. Alleged business fraud. No. He's guilty. It's over. This is the penalty phase. This is to find out how much it's going to cost him. Quite amazing. Just, I'll tell you. Let's find out who we got on line one. Hey, Alice, how are you?
Insane. How about yourself?
Can't complain. What's on your mind?
Well, a number of things. First off, have you read the op-ed in the Washington Post by him just having a fit about Matt Gaetz and saying he needs to be expelled from Congress and the party?
Who said that?
Newt Greenwich. He's wrote an op-ed in the Washington Post.
Oh, okay, yeah. There's a couple of people, you know, that are saying that now as well. And look, I'm good. Bye. Nothing would make me happier than to see Matt Gaetz shown the door.
Oh, me neither. Well, the hilarious part about it in this article that Greenwich wrote is he said, you know, he goes through saying Nancy Pelosi is a liberal Democrat, and I don't agree with her on anything. But she was right what she said about him on Face the Nation. And I'm thinking, you know, you just still had to get that little dig in there, right? They always have to stick that knife in there.
Yep.
And turn it. But what I wanted to say is congratulations. You got your wish.
it was predictable. You didn't need a crystal ball. You didn't need to be clairvoyant. He set himself up for this. This is what he wanted. And he got what he wanted.
I know, and a lot of people generally don't. So he actually did. But the whole Republican Party has gone insane, and there's just too much going on. And between Trump and his nonsense, and it's just like a regular clown show. They ought to have the latest episode of the Republican Clown Car or something. But you have a good evening,
thanks,
Rick.
Thanks, Alice. Appreciate it. No, look, that's the sad reality. And look, it's bread and circus. It's political theater. You know, the whole Trump trial is political theater. Today, he truthed out a picture of someone had drawn of him sitting next to white Jesus in a courtroom. And you go, am I missing something? No, because they're trying to marry him. This guy trying to marry him up to someone of faith, which is just bizarre to me. But am I surprised? No. Now, the weird thing is you look at the fact that Bloomberg has reported today. You stop and think about what Trump has done. Trump made a fortune off of inflating his assets, according to New York prosecutors. This is one of those things where, you know, as the rumor had been for years, his biggest fear is people finding out that he's not as rich as he says he is, that he's been inflating these things for years. And on paper, you know, when you're pushing the envelope, you know, 100 times, it makes you look a little bit wealthier than you are. And this is kind of interesting in that, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, we've been saying for years, he's not as rich as he is. And then look, you know, he's still richer than I am and he's richer than most people. But that billionaire status, maybe not. Maybe, you know, he hoodwinked everyone. And the con is finally up. That's the weird part of this. That the con might be finally up and that he's going to finally, for once in his life, be held accountable. Now, here's the scary stuff. Gallup poll out today. And this is bizarre to me. This is really twisted to me. Said that a record high percentage of Americans now trust Republicans to manage the economy over Democrats. In fact, they said some 53% said that the Republicans were more likely to do a better job at keeping the country prosperous. And you go, you mean the ones who can't keep a speaker? You mean the ones who keep taking us to the brink of shutdown? You mean the ones that are, you know, doing everything they can do to cause a recession? Again, this is brilliant poll taking, because again, you can make any poll say anything you want based on your sample size and where you sample this stuff. And you've got a mainstream media that keeps pushing this narrative out. You know, Republicans are, I've yet to meet someone who said, no, Republicans are going to make the economy great again. Because they're looking at what's going on and it's not good. But, you know, like Pavlovian dogs, Americans get all lathered up when the corporate media rings the bell. And this is, again, time and repetition where, you know, they say it so often that potentially some people might believe it. You know, I go back to Harry Truman, who said, you know, if you want to live like a Republican, vote for a Democrat. Because oddly enough, the economy does much better under Democrats. It usually falters under Republicans. I mean, I think back to, you know, Reagan. I think back to H.W. Bush. I think back to Bush, the collapse that came there. I think of Trump, the collapse that came there. It seems weird that, you know, Democrats inherit a bad economy. They make it better. They make it better, progressively better. They do the hard work. They do all the work of, you know, getting things back on the right track, you know, putting the supply chain back together, reopening the economy, doing all this stuff, getting people back to work, doing all this stuff. And the economy starts moving along, and then a Republican comes in with their policies and destroys it and trashes it. I mean, in my lifetime, H.W. Bush, first time I was ever laid off from a job because of his recession. W, second time I was laid off because of a collapse, because of his massive, almost depression. And then the COVID thing. What is it about Republicans crashing the economy? Why can't they stop? Oh, that's right, because we keep putting them into office. We should stop. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two.
On this day in labor history, the year was 1932. That was the day the state militia was called into Kincaid, Illinois. 164 high school students had just walked out of the classroom, declaring themselves on strike. They were protesting the school board's use of coal from the Peabody Coal Company. The students walked out in solidarity with their fathers, who were on strike against the Peabody coal mine in nearby Langleyville over wage concessions. The father-son strike, as it was referred to, was one more in a series of protest actions that came on the heels of the founding of the Progressive Miners of America a month earlier. Thousands of Illinois miners had just voted with their feet to repudiate John L. Lewis's UMWA over wage concessions. After their founding conference, new PMA leaders began aggressively organizing non-union mines. They marched into mining towns and ordered non-union diggers out of the mines. They also struck UMWA mines picketing against the industry standard of $5 a day that had been set by the latest concessionary contract. At some mines, the PMA was able to win the old $6.10 a day wage. Throughout the month, the state National Guard had been called out to a number of mining towns to quell armed conflicts between PMA and UMWA supporters. The Peabody coal mine in Langleyville had been shut down for months by ongoing PMA-UMWA conflict. Now it had reopened under heavy National Guard protection and was the only mine operating in Christian County. The striking fathers were PMA miners picketing the continued mine operations under the UMWA concessionary contract. The years-long Illinois mine wars had just begun. Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
What amazes me about outbreaks of bribery among high government officials is not just the level of greed involved, but that the take is often so cheesy. For example, there seems to be no end to the ongoing saga of Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas's peddling his position and prestige to right-wing corporate titans for what? Free rides on their jets, golf outings, and assorted baubles. He's supposed to be an impartial justice, but he consistently supports rich interests who are picking up his tabs. We taxpayers provide $274,000 a year in salary to Thomas. Why wouldn't he buy his own baubles and protect a smidgen of his judicial integrity? Now comes New Jersey's Senator Robert Menendez, chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, who has been oddly insistent on giving U.S. weaponry and financial aid to Egypt's repressive military dictatorship. Why? Because Menendez has sunk butt deep into influence peddling, using his position to advance Egyptian interests. In exchange, Egyptian agents have blessed him with huge wads of cash, gold bullion, a Mercedes-Benz convertible, and a no-show job for his wife. Oh, they also delivered an air purifier for his home. Seriously? An air purifier? That's a mighty cheap sellout. Yet, what a priceless symbol of the whole stinky deal. Meanwhile, Menendez says that the donations are unrelated to his honest concerns about our Mideast foreign policy. He proudly asserts that his senatorial assistance is just the, quote, normal work of a congressional office. This is Jim Hightower saying, sadly, he's right. Most Senate offices today routinely do official favors for moneyed interest in exchange for millions of dollars in bribes. But that's such an ugly word, so they call the big money payments campaign contributions. Then they get indignant when we call the system corrupt, but that's what it is.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, potentially some good news coming out of UAW Regions 8 and 9. Mack Truck, a tentative agreement for nearly 4,000 UAW members. I know our friends in Allentown are hopeful that a contract is coming, and maybe this is it. I don't know, but good news that there's movement, and we'll see how this goes. But I'm looking at all this strike activity that's going on. I'm looking at all of this worker power that's being exerted. This is good stuff. This is, I know the turmoil. I know the struggle is real, but this is good. This is finally people saying, I've had enough. And here to share some thoughts on having had enough, I've asked Raymond Jensen to come talk with us. Raymond is the UAW Region 9 Assistant Director. Raymond, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me on, Rick. I truly appreciate it.
So let me ask you about the Mack Truck situation. I understand a tentative agreement. Do we know what's going on there? Any thoughts?
So we were down there for a solidarity rally, you know, and the membership was definitely engaged. They had three different classes throughout the day. They were packed in the union hall. Our servicing rep has been working, you know, with the bargaining team day and night. And about 11:50 on Sunday, 11:50 p.m., they texted us and said that they had a tentative agreement. So it's good news. It sounds like the company's made some forward progress, and we'll see what the membership decides.
Yeah, no, that's what this comes down to. You know, even with the big three, you know, they could come back with an agreement tomorrow, but the membership, which when we were down on the picket line in Toledo and in Michigan at the parts plant up in Centerline and the Ford plant in Wayne, that was the common theme. We got to see what we're going to get, and you know, we're not taking what they give us anymore. We're demanding better. And that seemed to be the theme all across the places that we were at.
Absolutely. I was actually at the Michigan Assembly Plant the night the contract expired when the membership walked out. President Fain was up there, and you know, the membership was just said, hey, we've had enough, you know, and that seems to be the theme all across the country. And, you know, the best thing that I witnessed that night was the media wanted to talk to President Fain, and he said, hey, talk to these members, because this is what we're here for. It's about them. It's not about us.
Yeah, no, that's an excellent point. And look, it's about time that workers have a voice. You know, we started this program 18 years ago with that goal in mind, so that working people would have access to getting their stories out. And, you know, when we were down on the picket line talking to people, some of the stories that we heard from inside those plants, not great. I mean, when I was a kid growing up, those UAW jobs, those Ford jobs, those GM Chevy jobs, you know, those were gold standard employment. Those were family sustaining, life sustaining jobs. But the people we were talking about, this is, you know, backbreaking, hard body abusing work for not great wages.
Absolutely. I've been with the UAW for 24 years. I've been in two different GM facilities, and these jobs will break your body down. And people on the outside don't understand that, you know, and all they hear is that we're the greedy auto workers, you know, and the talking heads on TV want to say that the UAW is waging class warfare. Well, class warfare has been waged on us. You know, we just want a good middle class way of life. We're not asking to be millionaires. We just want to be respected with dignity and economic and social justice.
Yeah, you don't want to make a killing. You just want to make a living. Unlike the CEO and the executive class, which I find ironic and interesting, because you've got people who are millionaires, you know, 20 times over per year telling you that, hey, you know, I'm sorry, you know, that 40% raise, especially since most of it was what you gave up, you know, a couple of decades ago, that's just too much. I find that really ironic that people who got themselves a 40% raise into the millions are telling people who are making $20 an hour, no, we can't possibly afford that.
Right. We have some members, you know, making $16.67 an hour. It takes them 8 years to get to full rate, right? And anybody hired after 07 has no post-retirement health care, no pension. So when they leave, it's considered a voluntary quit. And I've done, you know, quite a few interviews with the media, and they were shocked to hear that. And, you know, they want to say that, oh, the UAW going on strike is going to raise the car prices. Well, vehicle prices have gone up 34% in the last 4 years. The CEO's pay has gone up 40% in the last 4 years, and stock buybacks are up 1,500%. While our workers' wages have gone up 6%, and the cost of labor is 4 to 5% in those vehicles. So who's really making the money? They're gouging the American consumer to line their pockets.
You brought up a pet peeve of mine right there. I mean, you hit on something that really drives me insane. Because we give these massive tax breaks to corporations under the guise that they're smart, they know what to do with the money, they're going to reinvest it in their business, they're going to pay better wages, better conditions. And yet, when the labor that you do generates massive profits, they use that money to buy their shares back, to pump up the price of their stock, to line their pockets even more. It seems like something. It seems like you're being forced to write out the kick me sign, put the tape on the kick me sign, stick the kick me sign to your own back, and then kick yourself in the backside.
Absolutely. You know, and it's just really weird that all the CEOs, like Jim Farley was saying, if we give the UAW everything they want, they're going to be making $300,000 a year. And it's like, I'll go back to the factory if that's the case. You know, they just want to create this narrative of that we're the greedy auto workers, right? And we're just asking for what's been taken away from us for the last 10 years. The companies got bailed out and we got sold out in 07 and 08, right? We helped them. They needed our help. We helped them, you know, and here we are today in 2023, and they're just keep piling on the money for themselves, and they want to blame it on chip supply or EV transition. Look, the UAW is on board with the EV transition, but it needs to be a fair and equitable transition for all of us. Those jobs need to be under the master agreement, and they need to be good paying middle class jobs. And we got to stop giving these companies free $9 million loan or $9 billion loans for battery plants, because that's not okay.
No, and look, at the end of this, you know, the amount of money that we give to these executives, to the shareholder, to the investor class, is, you know, I know during 2010, my Tea Party friends used to love to say redistribution of wealth. This is what that is. This is a massive redistribution of wealth from the people who actually create the wealth, do the work, you know, build the cars, build the products. This is a massive redistribution of wealth from their pockets, from their kitchen table, from their children's mouths, to people who, well, the hardest day's labor they do all day is moving money from one pocket to the other.
Absolutely. And, you know, Mary Barra makes, I think, like, what is it, $111,000 an hour? You know, she makes more in 1 hour than some of our workers make in 2 to 3 years, right? So they want to talk about, you know, corporate greed, or they want to talk about corporate or greedy auto workers. And again, we're just asking for what's been taken away from us over the years, right?
Yeah. So let me ask you this, because, you know, the frame he keeps popping up, you know, they're lazy auto workers. I hear this all the time now. This seems to be one of those corporate speaks that pop out. And I've addressed it by saying, look, if you've got a lazy worker, the problem is not with the worker, it's with management. You have lazy management who's not utilizing that worker properly, who's not managing them properly. It's their fault. But when you hear that frame, you know, how do you address that? And what do you think when you hear that?
I just think that the people that say that are uneducated, right? I mean, if you've worked inside these factories, I've been inside an engine plant for 10 years. I've been inside an HVAC facility for 13 years. I've never worked inside an assembly plant, but I have many friends that do. And you have to be a contortionist to work in these facilities, right? And it's just nonstop repetitive motion. They have shoulder injuries, they have elbow injuries, they have hip injuries, they have back injuries. The list goes on and on. So I try to educate the people when they say, oh, we're just lazy auto workers. But if you take a look at this country, the labor movement all across this country, it's not just the UAW, it's everybody. The workers have said, hey, we've had enough against these, we can't even call them corporations anymore. We can call them conglomerates, because they just control the world with their global profits, right? And they try to whipsaw. And I think that's the best part about what Sean Fain is doing, is he's whipsawing these three companies against each other and getting a taste of their own medicine, what they've done to us for years.
No, I'm a fan of, I didn't know much about him to begin with, but I love the fact that he's using the right words. He's using the frames we've been using on this program for a very long time. It's not red hat, blue hat. It's hard hat. It's about the working class of this country. Stay out of the red hat and right left divide. This is about green. This is about supporting our families and our communities. That's the right frame. And I'm thrilled that they're doing this, because understand, it's not just you guys who are were on strike. I mean, they're, you know, the screen actors and the writers, and, you know, they're going to be healthcare workers potentially tomorrow. 50 some thousand of them going on strike. You know, bartenders and hotel workers in Las Vegas. You've got members across your district who've been on strike. It's finally workers have said enough already. And I guess the question I have is, how much of this is coming out of the pandemic when people were told that they were essential and frontline heroes and necessary and all that stuff? And how much is it just people are tired of not being able to make ends meet?
That's a great point. I'm glad you brought up the pandemic, because the pandemic, if there's one positive that's come out of the pandemic, it's exposed these greedy corporations. So, you know, we were at the kickoff of negotiations, and we went to Stellantis, Ford, and GM. And they have some of the biggest office buildings in the world, right? I think Stellantis has the second biggest office building next to the Department of Defense. Those workers, those office workers said if they had to come to work 5 days a week, they'd quit. They work from home, and some of them are still working from home to this day. Well, we were essential. We're in the factories. We've had members here that have passed away that have caught COVID while working in these factories. And I think the workers have just said enough is enough, right? Look at, we're essential. We helped you out. Now it's our turn, you know, share the profits, share the wealth, right? We're not asking to be millionaires, but the pandemic did expose that. And you know, we did go down to New York City and we walked with the Screen Actors Guild. And I learned something pretty disturbing down there. Living in New York City, they told me that they have to make above $28,500 in order to qualify for healthcare from their employer. 87% of their workforce doesn't qualify for healthcare because they make under $28,500 living in New York City. That's disgusting. That is absolutely disgusting in today's age.
No, you're spot on. And this is why, again, I come back to the politics of this. You know, I know President Biden walked the picket line in Michigan, and it was very clear. Look, you know, you guys, you deserve what you earn, and you deserve better than what you're being paid. And for me, finally having someone in the White House who gives a rat's behind about working people is important to me. But I'm curious your thoughts. Did it matter to you that Biden walked the picket line? Does it matter that the rhetoric is there, or is that just noise on the way to getting where you need to get on the contract front?
Well, that's a twofold question. So that's obviously, we know that was the first time that a sitting president's ever came down to the picket line. And I'm glad that we have somebody in there that is pro-labor and that is on our side, because we know that we have one party that is actively working against us, that is constantly undermining labor. The best thing that President Fain has done is withhold his endorsement from Biden to force his hand to say, hey, look it, if you want our endorsement, you're gonna earn it. And we've carried that down to a local level. And we said the same thing when we do cap endorsements. Hey, if you want our UAW endorsement, because that means a lot to you, you're gonna earn it. Are you gonna walk a picket line with us? What type of vehicle do you drive? Do you support labor? All those are questions that we asked. You know, we know that Trump went to Clinton Township and it was 500 non-union members at a non-union shop by invite only. So he's playing the game. And look at, we just need somebody that's going to support us. And if you support us, the UAW is going to support you as well.
Yeah. See, you bring up an interesting point, this, you know, starting, you know, questioning people about, you know, what kind of car do you drive? You know, what are your values? You know, and I say this all the time, you know, I look for the union label and wherever I can. You know, I drive a Jeep Wrangler. My son drives my F-150 and my wife's got a Charger. All UAW vehicles, because that's important to us, to ensure that the people creating the things that we need make a decent living. It's almost heartbreaking to find out that it's not what we thought. And I think in talking with people, which is why I think so many people are supportive of what's going on right now with you guys. I think it's surprising that people have found out that it's fallen as far as it has, and the job isn't what it used to be, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. So I'm a second generation auto worker. My stepdad, you know, retired. He worked 30 years for GM. He retired in 1998. I started in 1999. But back in the 70s, right, we had 1.5 million auto workers. Today we have, what, just about 150,000? And this used to be a good middle-class way of life. And unfortunately, it's not anymore. There's nothing in it for the new hires. Because as I said before, after 07, you have no post-retirement healthcare. You have no post-retirement pension. there's nothing to look forward to. It's just a job. It's not a career.
Yeah.
These used to be good paying careers.
No. Look, I saw it as when I was a small kid, you know, neighbor got a job at the Ford plant and immediately their lives got better. So that frame union job, better life was drilled into me at a very young age. So I guess last line of questioning I've got, what are we hearing? You know, as I said, you know, the Mac, they've got a tentative agreement. We'll see where that goes. I haven't heard a lot of progress so far with the big three. What are we hearing? Anything? How do you see this playing out over the next couple of days? Any thoughts?
I haven't heard much. I know last update I got that negotiations were going slow. As we saw last Friday, Stellantis did come at the last minute and agree to some things. It sounds like, you know, Ford did agree to some things earlier in the week and then they backed out of it. GM just seems to be playing hardball, which is kind of ironic because the CEO, I believe it was her uncle or her grandfather, started as a skilled tradesman. So she's actually forgotten where she's come from. And it's quite a shame, but I think it's, you know, the membership is dug in and I think they're ready for a fight. They're fired up. They're ready to go. And sometimes you have to make sacrifices when you want to win something, right? So I see it being a long drawn out battle, at least with GM.
Yeah. Ultimately, it's going to come down to what my T-shirt that I got in Toledo says, UAW versus corporate greed. The idea that you guys are finally standing up and saying enough already. We demand to be treated decently, respected, and that means decent wages, hours, conditions. Jeff Raymond, I appreciate you taking time for us. As this continues, I'd love to have you keep us up to date on what's going on. Maybe come back and share with us down the road.
Absolutely, Rick. I appreciate you having me on. Big fan of the show. And anytime you want me on, just let me know and we'll make it happen.
Outstanding. Thanks so much, Raymond. Raymond Jensen, UAW Region 9 Assistant Director. Again, this is finally people saying enough. I want to hear your thoughts, though. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. I'm going to take a quick break. Right back with your thoughts. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. That's all.
Phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1967. That was the day that the Dust Bowl troubadour, Woody Guthrie, died. Over the course of his life, Woody Guthrie wrote almost 3,000 songs. He was one of the thousands of people who took to the road during the Great Depression, swept into wandering by the winds that churned the Dust Bowl. In an interview with NPR, fellow folk music legend Pete Seeger described Guthrie's influence, saying, quote, "We all read about music being part of people's lives, but I hadn't seen it in action until I met him. The words that came out of his mouth and the music he made all flowed together with the life that he led, and I was greatly attracted to it and kind of tagged along with him for several months. Woody showed me how to hitchhike and how to ride the freight trains, how to sing in saloons." A 2013 article in Paste magazine summarized Guthrie's legacy, writing, "No artist has ever expressed a deeper will to fight against oppression and the rights of the little guy than Woody Guthrie." Iconic author John Steinbeck wrote this vivid description of Guthrie, harsh-voiced and nasal, his guitar hanging like a tire on a rusty rim. "There is nothing sweet about Woody, and there is nothing sweet about the songs he sings. But there is something more important for those who will listen. There is the will of a people to endure and fight against oppression. I think we call this the American spirit."
This land is your land, and this land is my land. From California to the New York Island, and the Redwood Forest, and the Gulf Stream waters. This land was made for you and me.
Labor History in 2, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and the Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
I find it interesting that the president of the Michigan AFL-CIO, Ron Beaver, he had an op-ed over at the Detroit Free Press titled, "I Lead the Michigan AFL-CIO. Trump has never shown up for union workers." And look, you know, the reason I bring up Biden walking the picket line is finally a president has bothered. You know, again, I go back to the Obama thing where, you know, and I'll say it again. He said, "I'm going to put on the comfortable shoes, going to get out there," and never did. Never used those comfortable shoes. But Biden did. He got out there. And that is enormous. And then the response from Trump and the Republicans to do what they do, fraud, held a union-esque kind of type rally with union haters. I mean, stop and think about this for a second. And my mind was, as I'm watching the owner of the non-union facility that hosted Trump's fraud event, with his kid on his shoulders, you know, holding up a union sign, I couldn't help but think how hard that must have been for that guy to do. And all those people, you know, the woman with the, looked like she had pearls on and really well manicured, you know, nails and, you know, dressed to the nines, holding, "I'm an auto worker" sign. You go, you are not an auto worker. You are not, you couldn't find an auto worker if your life depended on it. If one of them bit you in the behind, you wouldn't find one. But you're standing there holding, what kind of pride, what kind of moral, what did you have to do to make that okay? And look, I guess maybe they thought it was an early Halloween costume. I don't know. But I was thinking about all those people in that facility. You know, what is it that they had to swallow? Because they hate unions. It's the Republican platform. Destroy working people, destroy their unions. It is part of who they are. These are the people who in Michigan passed for the whole no rights at work agenda. And yet there they are holding signs. Holding signs saying that they're UAW members. I mean, it's quite remarkable to me. It really is that their ideology, that their politics, you will never see me for any reason whatsoever holding a no rights at work sign. It's never going to happen. If the National Right to Work Committee said, "Hey, you know, we're going to hold an event, come and hold this sign," never, never, never going to happen. Never once going to happen. Let's quick go to the phones. We got Jeremy in Racine, Wisconsin. Jeremy, what's on your mind?
Well, hello, Richard. Nice to be on your show. I'm an Anglican monk, currently living in Edinburgh, Scotland, but I'm back visiting some people here in Wisconsin. And the thing I don't understand is the anti-labor, anti-worker sentiment that's voiced by people who are hourly workers, because anyone who is an hourly worker has benefited from the efforts of organized labor.
Yes. I mean, it's amazing to me, too. But we've been trained in this country like Pavlovian dogs to think that we're super individuals.
And you know, I'm a priest, I'm a monk also. I've just celebrated my 41st year in the priesthood and my 37th year in the monastery. And one year when I preached on Labor Day weekend, I really enraged some of the right-wingers, which I always enjoy doing, by saying, you know, organized labor has fought for American freedom just as strongly as anyone in the military has done so. They have toiled, they have labored, they have laid down their lives to improve American workers. And just the vitriol that we continually hear from the right wing.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. But understand, it's all about time and repetition. the moneyed interests in this country who control our media keep pounding working people with this. The old Jay Gould quote, I can easily pay half the working class to murder the other half. This is American history playing out before us because it's tried and true.
Yes,
you can
yes.
divide, conquer, and pit people against each other.
Yes, and it's just the brainwashing that's gone on. I mean, how many years now has, I have to control myself, Fox, or the right-wing propaganda network, how long have they been on now spreading their lies?
A couple of decades.
You know, and you've got a whole generation who's grown up listening.
You're listening to The Shaw. WAUK 540 AM Jackson. W266 DR Waukesha. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.